But Deborah, how did the FCC decide in the first place to conduct a review of its RFR guidelines?
In 2013, they issued a notice of inquiry asking people to submit evidence on whether or not they should change their 1996 standards regarding U.S. safety limits for exposure. In 2019, in December, right before Christmas, ignoring the thousands of pages of submitted evidence, they closed that inquiry without showing that they had reviewed the record.
So what did the recent D.C. court decision say?
The court found that the FCC had been arbitrary and capricious because they did not follow the law requiring systematic, reasoned review of the record. They determined that they had found some evidence of review with respect to cancer, not that it was correct, but they showed some evidence of review, but that with respect to non-cancer effects, including impacts on children, impacts on the developing brain and reproduction, and impacts on wildlife and the environment, the court had failed to find any evidence that the FCC had reviewed any of those other impacts. But with respect to cancer, the court said that the FCC had adequately relied on a report from the Food and Drug Administration regarding cancer risks. Regarding all the other effects, they found no evidence of any review. EHT and other experts vigorously dispute this reliance on the FDA because we have published on our website letters from scientists who say that the FDA review was cherry-picking and biased when it concluded that there's no evidence that cell phone radiation causes cancer. In fact, in reaching that conclusion, the FDA ignored its own study that it had requested in 1999 from the National Toxicology Program on whether or not cell phone radiation caused cancer. That study, which was completed and released finally in 2018, found clear evidence of cancer in animals when exposed to levels of cell phone radiation that currently exist. Those animals that live only 2 years were exposed to levels of radiation that approximate what humans can get in their 70-year lifetime.
Really important point. Did the court say anything about the difference in the environment today where the technology is different with pulsation, different higher pulsations and modulation, and people have longer term exposures or start earlier in their life, and the ubiquity of the technology? Did they discuss that at all?
The court acknowledged that children are particularly an important factor, and the American Academy of Pediatrics had submitted expert evidence that children have smaller heads, thinner skulls, more fluid in their brain, and that they can absorb up to 10 times more radiation into their bone marrow and 30 times more radiation into their hippocampus. The court asked why the FCC had not looked at the evidence on children at all, especially given their long-term exposure to multiple levels of radiation, many of which did not exist when the standards were written in 1996.
Did they talk about 5G?
They acknowledge that the way the standards are set now, the FCC claims that the current standards are relevant to 5G. And in fact, they are not. What we know is that the 5G rollout is proceeding all over the world, assuming that these 1996 standards are still relevant to 5G. In fact, 5G is still being invented. And in order for it to work, you need a network of, in the United States, of over 1 million new antennas, many of which are being proposed to be on street lamps and right at the levels of people's bedroom windows.
So the FCC has been relying on the FDA's opinion on this matter. How is it that they've been getting away for so long, relying on the FDA that doesn't evaluate RF emitting communications equipment like they do RF emitting medical equipment?
That is an excellent question, and I don't have an answer for it. The FCC has relied on the FDA on this matter for years, but the court specifically found no evidence that the FCC had consulted with other relevant agencies with expertise in this matter, and that in consulting with the FDA, they had only considered the superficial analysis the FDA had produced on cancer. And on other issues, there's no evidence of any consideration. In fact, the FDA conducts tests to evaluate medical devices and microwave oven for emissions, but does not routinely evaluate cell phones and other wireless radiating devices. We know that studies in France conducted by their National Radiation Monitoring Agency have clearly shown that 9 out of 10 phones tested by them 3 years ago failed their own standards, which were more liberal than ours. And they have, and as a result, been recalling millions of phones in France. In the United States, relying on the FDA has done nothing.
Who does the FDA and the FCC report to? You know, under what umbrella do they fall?
The FDA is part of the Department of Health and Human Services. The FCC is a separate executive branch agency, and ultimately they report to the president. The FDA reports to the chief of HHS, which is now Javier Becerra. And as far as I know, right now they do not even have a new leader of the FDA. Unfortunately, the person in charge of radiation evaluation for the FDA has some conflict of interest issues involved in his own review and has done a very cursory analysis of the data, which is why the court said you have not shown a systematic, reasoned record of a hard look at the submitted evidence. And that is why we remand back to the FCC, saying to the FCC, you must now review this evidence. You must show a reasoned record of decision-making and evaluation. That doesn't necessarily guarantee they're going to change what they have to say, but that is why we at EHT are calling for the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine to be asked to provide independent expert advice with a group of people that are not associated with this industry. As we have shown repeatedly, the industry itself controls ICNIRP, the International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection, and it's ICNIRP that has been relied on by the FDA and, of course, by the FCC. And many have published, including especially Leonard Hardell, an analysis of why the ICNIRP process is not unbiased. It self-appoints its members. It reports to no one. It reports to no government. Its funding is quite questionable. And yet it gives advice that says that there's no cancer risk and there's very little risk to the rest of us, which we dispute heavily and have published about it. Its information about this is on our website at ehtrust.org.
So the EPA several years ago, many years ago, was on the brink of recommending stricter exposure guidelines, and then it was shuttered. Does the EPA have any role in, as you see it, in the future of helping to evaluate the risks today?
The EPA program on non-ionizing radiation on electromagnetic fields was decimated and ultimately destroyed by Congress defunding the budget for these activities. And so right now, as far as I know, the Office of Radiation at EPA does not have the staff with expertise in this matter that they once had. Carl Blackman is a world-class scientist who led efforts at EPA, was president of the Bioelectromagnetic Society, and has retired. And I do not know at this point that they have any staff with competence in this issue. However, they do have regulatory and statutory authority to be responsible for this matter. And if Congress were to fund them adequately, they could certainly carry out this mission. The FCC does not employ a single health expert. They relied on the FDA, which conducted a very cursory review, and that was the basis for their very abruptly closing the record in December of 2019 without notice, without showing any evidence of considering the thousands of pages of evidence submitted to them.
Well, congratulations on this incredible accomplishment. And what do you see? Why do you think this case is so important? I know we can't predict the future, but why, as you see it, why is this case important? And is it important to the people on the ground trying to fight antennas and cell towers and smart meters and the like?
This case, satellites? Right. Thanks to you and many others working in this issue, this case really is a fundamental shift in what's happening. The silence of other expert agencies, which the court noted, cannot be construed as a reasoned explanation for why the commission abruptly ended their notice of inquiry on whether or not there are health effects and environmental effects from non-ionizing radiation that you currently can be exposed to from cell towers, from routers, from laptops and phones. Amicus briefs in this case were filed that included a brief from Dr. Linda Birnbaum, the former director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. And she said, overall, the NTP findings demonstrate the potential for radio frequency radiation to cause cancer in humans. The Building Biology Institute and the family of Catherine Kleiber also filed critical briefs, as did Children's Health Defense. And all of these argued, I think quite successfully, that the FCC needs to go back and look at the record that has been filed. We have links to all the relevant documents available on our website, thousands of pages of evidence that were submitted, including the amicus briefs that I just mentioned, including one from the Natural Resources Defense Council. So I think that this is a huge change in what's happening now. And unfortunately, the push for 5G is moving ahead as though this court decision never happened. So we've got to do a better job of informing people so that they can write to their congresspeople and say, look, we need to stop the 5G.